Are you one of the many bedside nurses feeling a little burnt out? Maybe you want to make a lateral or a vertical shift in your career, but you're not sure where to go. There's the management route, then there's the nurse practitioner route, and academia, and research, nurse educator, etc., etc. But what's the best fit for you? If you're ready to make a change and move away from the bedside but are confused about the multitude of nursing opportunities available, stick around for this episode. Because today, I will be joined by Sarah, the founder of New Thing Nurse. We will explore the wide variety of nursing opportunities that exist beyond bedside nursing. We'll discuss in detail many of the options available in nursing from advanced practice to education and leadership roles. We'll also talk briefly about resume writing and interviewing, because no matter if you're working as a nurse at the bedside or you're a nurse in another setting, you want to make sure you are writing a strong resume and adequately preparing for any interview you may have. You're not going to want to miss this episode, as it's packed full of beneficial information to help you take that next step forward in your nursing career. Welcome to the Up My Nursing Game podcast. My name is Annie. I've been a clinical nurse for 8 years, and I am curious. I use this podcast to address common clinical questions, share unique perspectives across the healthcare team, and cover what's missed in nursing school.
Hi, my name is Sarah Wells. Thank you for having me today. I've been an ER nurse for the last 11 years, left the bedside last year. I still work radiology per diem, and I'm also the founder of New Thing Nurse, which is an academic and professional coaching company for the nursing community.
Sarah Wells, who you may remember from the NTI episode, has an encyclopedia of knowledge about nursing degrees and careers. She has shared her knowledge by coaching nurses, both new and experienced. So tell me a little bit about New Thing Nurse and what you do for nurses.
New Thing Nurse kind of developed after many years of seeing a gap between the services and support provided to nurses and nursing students for them to achieve their professional and academic goals. So what does that mean? Basically, I provide services to help nurses get a new job, go back to school, start in a new specialty, or just figure out what their next new thing is. I do a lot of resume writing because resumes are a really challenging document for nurses to write and update. And what a lot of people don't know is that a lot of AI is used in hiring processes on online portals. There's this software called Applicant Tracking System software that filters out applicants. So your resume has to not only look good to a human reader, but also be compatible with computer software and AI. I also do a lot of other professional document writing, interview coaching, and a lot of career coaching and mentoring for a lot of nurses or nursing students who might just not know where they want to go in their nursing career, because there's so many options out there. And a lot of times people don't know what they don't know, right? So because there's such a diversity in the nursing field. What I love doing is sitting down with someone who's like, I want to be a nurse, but I don't know what kind. And I go, what do you like to do? What would be your like ideal role? What's your ideal schedule? What kind of environment do you want to work in? And then helping them realize and explore what other options are out there, because hospital nursing is amazing. Emergency nursing is obviously a passion of mine, but there are so many options out there. Not everybody needs to work in a hospital environment. And it's 2023. There's so many options to work from home, to work online, to work in an outpatient setting and clinics and all kinds of things. And so even for a new grad or a 20, 30 year experienced nurse, sometimes they don't realize all the opportunities that are out there with their base nursing degree.
I really like the idea of interview practicing. You know, one thing that I've kind of figured out is that being a good nurse and being a good interviewer are not necessarily one and the same skill. It takes a lot of practicing to be able to interview well. And, you know, even very good nurses can not be good interviewers. So I think it's just like any other nursing skill we develop, you need to develop interview skills as well.
Yes, sometimes people are applying to jobs or interviewing for jobs and not getting a positive response, like not getting job offers or not getting interview offers. And they think the applicant, the person, the individual thinks it's something wrong with them. But it's not that they're not qualified. It's not that they aren't a great choice or competitive applicant for these jobs. It's that they're missing a skill set that is not a traditional nursing skill set. This is a professional life skill set, a job skill set. Resume writing, super weird, super formatted, has to work with, again, humans and computer software. Interviewing skills is totally awkward and unique process, right? Like, how often do you walk into a room and ask someone to judge you for fun? So there's a lot of pressure there. Also, there's a ton of other like cultural barriers that I think people don't think about. So we have a huge nursing workforce that were internationally educated and come to this country. Maybe they don't speak English as a first language, or they have never gone through an American interview process, which is very different than interview processes in other countries. And so they don't know kind of what the cultural norms are, how to best answer a question. They might be concerned about how their accent makes them sound, things like that.
Yeah.
And so it's a very nuanced, very multifactorial situation. And then I've also worked, the other unique population is seasoned nurses who have been in maybe one job or one organization for 10, 15, 20 years. And maybe they want to make a transition out of that organization, out of that facility, and they haven't had to have a formal interview in like a decade or two. And so what does that look like? Like anything else, hiring processes change and evolve over time. And so they need help just supporting themselves. They have amazing, rich careers, but they need to know how to talk about it.
Yes, exactly.
And articulate their accomplishments. And I will also say a huge theme in nursing is we are a humble profession.
But that's not going to serve you in an interview.
Right. An interview is the like place to humble brag. If anything, even to like brag and really promote yourself. And self-promotion is something that nurses culturally just don't do. I think this comes from the fact that we go to work and literally do magic and save lives as our normal 9-to-5 or 7-to-7 kind of job. Every day you like save a life and that's a norm. And for anyone else in the world, if anyone like went to an office and saved someone's life at the office, they would be talking about it for the rest of their lives. But we literally do that like multiple times a week sometimes. So how do we gauge what is going above and beyond? How do we talk about what is an exceptional situation? And how do we articulate all these things we just do really naturally? And so I think it's kind of teaching someone a language and how to translate their experiences into these nice nuggets of stories, because it's all about storytelling.
It's all about storytelling.
100%. How to tell those stories to people who may be nurse leaders, but also they might be HR staff. They may not be in the clinical setting. So you really have to explain it on a very low level or a different level than you would to maybe another clinician.
All right. So let's go ahead and just dive into this discussion here about nurses who are thinking about leaving the bedside. Maybe they're working as a clinical nurse in a hospital and they're ready to do something different. There are so many avenues for nurses who want to grow in their careers beyond the bedside. And I'm just going to go out and say, like, there's nothing wrong with the bedside. I, for one, love bedside nursing. But those who are not like me and who want to go beyond the bedside, this will be a discussion about different options.
I think I'm going to start with, I think, a lesser known master's degree program in the field, but one that I have. So I just have a personal love and fondness for it, is the Clinical Nurse Leader Program. So this was a program that was developed, I think, about 15 years ago or so. And it is a master's level program that has an associated exam. The only people who can take the Clinical Nurse Leader exam, or CNL, which I'll probably refer to it most of the time, are people who've graduated from a CNL program. And this was, I think, a program that was developed to kind of help with not just the nurse staffing crisis, which has been a chronic and now more acute issue over the last few decades, but also to help elevate big picture thinking, process improvement education, and getting nurses to direct care, but also with a quick option of maybe going into a quality improvement or patient navigator kind of role. So for my experience, I liked the idea of going to a graduate program and being with a cohort of students who were looking to go into patient care with an idea of a more holistic process level focus in the education. So I graduated, and then I had to separately register for the CNL exam. So I was a graduate of a CNL program as a new grad nurse, but not a CNL yet because I wasn't a certified CNL yet. And then I actually waited a couple of years to take that exam because I just wasn't ready right after school. I started in an emergency department as a new grad and had an amazing experience and wound up staying in a ED direct care role up until last summer for like 11 years. And I did that with my master's in a direct care role. So this is a route for people if they want a master's degree, but maybe want to stay in direct care, or then have options of I already have a master's and maybe want to start navigating through a leadership kind of position, which we'll talk more about. The CNL role itself is one that is utilized in a lot of hospitals as kind of a quality improvement sort of role. The VA, Veterans Affairs Administration, really loves CNLs. They hire a lot of them, and usually they're hired into a position of quality improvement, looking for how to improve processes to optimize patient care and safety, right? They also are used as patient navigators sometimes. So like you have a clinician background, but you work with the patients and their loved ones to help them have a better understanding of what their treatment plans will be. I often see these in oncology departments or pediatric chronic conditions departments with working with basically kids or adult patients who are going through a very long-term treatment process. And the CNL or the nurse navigator, whoever winds up in that position, usually has a master's degree and usually is someone who speaks both language, the medicalese of the healthcare environment, and then helps translate that to the patient and their loved ones, and also helps them navigate all their appointments, their procedures, helps them prep and all those kind of things. So it can be a really special position with a lot of gratification for the nurse in that role. Major distinction for a CNL is that they are not an advanced practice nurse. So they are not a nurse practitioner. They do not have diagnostic or ordering provisions, and they aren't going to be board certified to do that.
The clinical nurse leadership certification and role for nurses looks pretty neat, especially if you want to maintain some level of direct connection with patients. You can serve as a navigator while also taking on leadership roles, which can really help to diversify your nursing skill set. How did you use your CNL degree or certificate in your career?
So it's a certification. It's a 4-year certification. I renew every 4 years with CEs. I use my CNL background a lot with shared governance. I was really involved with my unit council, my unit-based council in my ERs. And I think my education and background really helped me identify issues in patient care processes. So with like our protocols or processes of getting a patient in from triage to the trauma bay and what that system might be of delivering that care, I think I was better able to identify what the weaknesses in those systems were. And also the CNL program I went to had a big focus, and I think this is a focus of all CNL programs, is in evidence-based care. So what is evidence-based practice? How do you find it? How do you assess what is good research or what's not good research? And then how do you operationalize that standard of care you found in a paper into your department, whatever it may be, or unit that you're in? I wound up doing a lot of pediatric care coordination at a community ER. And so I was responsible for representing my ER at a cross-campus committee to help facilitate improved pediatric care processes for the 10,000 plus kids we saw at our ER that was not at a pediatric facility. Our sister campus was a pediatric facility, so we had to transfer everybody out. And all of our nurses were not peds nurses. They just happened to take care of peds patients. So how to deliver education on how to do mock pediatric resuscitation, how to best approach kids depending on their developmental age. So I helped establish a pediatric mock code education program. We would bring in specialists from our sister hospital. So how to navigate resources and make those connections to my ED. And I think a lot of that came from my CNL education. And then I was lucky enough actually to precept 2 CNLs while I was still at that ER. And it helped me better prepare and train them because they operationalized a couple of evidence-based practice pediatric care techniques, educate our staff, and help get buy-in from our unit-based counsel. And I knew how to like help facilitate all of that experience, real-time experience, I think because I'd gone through that educational process and incorporated all of that into my practice for the last 11 years.
That's awesome. So if I had to guess, if you're thinking you're working with a client and they talk about wanting to improve processes, they want to think big picture about things, they want to see better outcomes for patients and their families, that they might be a good candidate for the CNL route.
I think it's a great option. And there are master's entry. So if you're like, I want to become a nurse, but I've never been a nurse before, you can directly go into those programs if you already have a bachelor's degree. And if you don't have a bachelor's degree, or if you've already been a nurse and they're experienced nurse, you can definitely go to a CNL program and just get that master's degree. And I think it also sets you up really well if you are interested in going into education, if you want to do quality improvement, like leadership roles, manager style roles, because really the focus of that program is to help evaluate, manage, and optimize systems. And so it can be a microsystem that like is one little process that is affecting one patient or a patient population, or it could be something that's unit or department level.
Got it. Okay. I think that does a really good job of painting the picture of a CNL role.
There's not as many of those programs out there, but I think it's a really nice, there are online options. And they're also, if you don't want to go direct necessarily into nursing education, or you don't want a business administration, healthcare administration route leadership stuff, and this is kind of a leadership degree that's pretty cool, master's degree that's unique and also is very applicable to direct care or department or unit level leadership. Like I feel that if you're on a unit-based council or you're championing new care processes, this is a great role for you. For the charge nurse, I mean, really for direct care nurses, charge nurses, all the way up to like director level, this degree could benefit you at any of those points. And the CNL compensation salary or hourly wage will be more comparable, I think, to a direct care nurse. But again, there's wide variation in the compensation state to state and region to region, just like there is for direct care nurses.
Next, we'll dive into advanced practice nursing roles. These are ones requiring at least a master's level degree and associated board certifications.
Next, we're talking about a CNS, which is a clinical nurse specialist. It's another master's degree program. I don't know if there may exist out there certificate programs, but I don't think that's true. I think it's just a master's degree program, but new programs are coming up every minute, every day. CNS is also a board exam that you have to take afterwards. It is an advanced practice role. So think of like kind of like an MP. This is a role that can order things. However, it's a more limited advanced practice role. The specialization is more in clinical practice. In a CNS program, you're going to do some sort of thesis, capstone project, something along those lines. That's clinical application. You do have to pass your CNS exam upon completion. And I think a lot of their roles are surrounding clinical process improvement in departments. Sometimes they're in an educator style role. They are able to order things sometimes under protocols. I've heard the example of blood for transfusion is something that they might be able to order, or testing some simple diagnostics. Now, the scope and standards of the practice of a CNS will vary depending on the state you're in, because once you get into that APRN, advanced practice nurse realm, your ability to practice and what all you can do basically is regulated by state law and regulations, and whatever the federal also, of course, over that, but usually it's a state regulation. CNS programs are usually about 2 years on average. It's a great way to become, if you're really like a clinical focused person who really wants to deep dive into a certain patient population, you often can take a CNS program that is specialized in a certain patient population. So like I know a neonatal CNS, I have a friend who's a pediatric critical care CNS, and you can really deep dive into a certain patient population. Then usually your experience in those programs that are specialized in those patient populations does help navigate where you can go in the future and what roles you can take on. So if you're like a PICU, pediatric intensive care trained CNS, you're probably not going to be able to go directly into adult without some sort of further education and training, kind of like in an MP program. So it's a really great role. Compensation for this will probably be comparable more to an MP pay. But again, there's wide variation in the compensation state to state and region to region, just like there is for direct care nurses.
Where does the specialization come into the education for a CNS? How does that work?
No, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. My understanding is it's always in your program that you're specializing in, and then you have to take the board exam or the accrediting exam that you take after your program of study is specialized also. So you would take a specific like neonatal CNS exam or the adult gerontology CNS exam. So you could only get certified, I think, in the focus that you studied in your CNS program. So the specialization, as far as I know, starts in the education program and then gets further supported when you pass your boards.
Okay. So kind of moving down this practitioner or up, maybe this practitioner ladder, I guess would take us to the NP route.
Yeah. So it's like a spectrum of advanced practice nurses, right? And yeah. So
it's not a ladder. I like that spectrum.
So I think on our next step of this spectrum is the nurse practitioner, which is, I think, a lot more familiar of a role for a lot of nurses and also a very popular degree track for a lot of people when they're like, I don't think I want to do direct care as a nurse anymore, but I still want to work in a clinical environment. So I'm thinking I might go the nurse practitioner route. So the nurse practitioner route historically has been a master's degree program or a post-master certificate program. Those both exist. And there was the most common nurse practitioner program is the family nurse practitioner program, so the FNP. What I didn't know graduating from nursing school was that there were many subspecialties of nurse practitioners. So I thought all NP programs were FNP programs, family nurse practitioners. But like in the doctor world, medical world, there are specialty education programs depending on the acuity or patient population you want to work with. So nurse practitioner is an advanced practice role. This means that they can order diagnostics, they can order medications, things like that. The scope of that ability will be limited and delineated by the state you work in, because one state can be very different from another. Full practice authority, which means a nurse practitioner can practice on their own independent of a provider in their organization, is a legislation and regulatory movement that is coming to many states, but there are still many states where a nurse practitioner has to work in conjunction with a physician always, which I think is an important point depending on the state you're working in and what are your goals when you're like, I want to work in this role where I see myself having my own mental health clinic and I want to be able to order meds. That may be possible in one state, but that might be very different in reality in another state.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought all NPs were fully autonomous.
I know. I think that's a common misconception, but in many states, they still have to work very closely with doctors, and there's many reasons why, but it always comes back down to the legislation and regulations of your state. So important point to explore, depending on what your hopes and goals are with your NP program. So again, NPs specialize within their program of study. So there are now NP programs for like mental health. There is an emergency care for emergency department nurse practitioner programs, very few, but there are some. Acute care is one that's developed, I think, over the last 10 to 15 years. So that's when you want to work in the acute care environment. There are pediatric nurse practitioner programs. I think there's women health. There's also the role of midwife, people who want to help deliver babies. I think is more of a midwife role. So all of these NP programs have different tracks. And when you graduate from these NP program, and a family nurse practitioner, again, the most common, which is someone who works from birth to death, usually in that space of a primary care role and primary care acuity. So all of these degree programs have their own focus, and then they have a licensure exam they have to take after you graduate, and then you go and find a job, and depending on your state, that'll be on your own or in a clinic or in a hospital with or without a physician to work with you. It is an APRN, like we were talking about, and this is a role, like if you're like, I want to be a nurse practitioner, I really want to be able to order things and do diagnostics and be in that kind of role of the advanced care provider. You have to go to school for that. There's no other option for this role. You always have to get at least a master's degree. And they are trying to make this a doctoral level role at some point. If you're doing a master's degree, usually it's 2 years. The doctoral level is usually 3. The doctoral level is called a DNP, which gets confusing because we'll be talking about the doctoral of nursing practice option in just a minute. You can get a doctoral level, and so you can be doctor nurse practitioner if you want to be. And I think this is a great role. But again, you have to want to be that person who's making decisions about diagnostics, making decisions about medications. You have to be okay with working with someone over you all the time if you're in a state that requires that. And I think you have to know what patient population you want to work with before going into school. Very important. So definitely do your research on your programs. And also a big challenge for many nurse practitioner students is in the nurse practitioner programs, you have to do so many hours of clinical rotations, right, with a focus on whatever patient population you're working with. And there are a lot of NP programs now that do not set you up with your clinical preceptors. This is a huge challenge for people. So it's a complex situation. So I just always want to tell people the reality of what these programs are. And when you're looking at these programs, you definitely want to ask questions about what is your process of assigning preceptors? Especially with these online programs, there's usually less support in finding preceptors and clinical rotation sites. So these are major considerations, and also make sure that one, your program is accredited. And also, I think what the pass rate for your board exam is always a great question, no matter what program you're going into, because you want a program that's going to set you up for success on that licensing exam and also help support you, hopefully, in getting a job. So you also want to ask, like, what's your net networking or alumni hire rate, because there's also a surplus of certain nurse practitioners of certain focuses in certain areas, and there might not be enough jobs in that area, which does several things. Makes it hard to find a job when you graduate, and also it drives down the market price of salaries. So just keep all those things in consideration when you're going down that route. But it's an amazing role and a lot of diversity in what you can do, inpatient and outpatient. But it's very dependent on the patient population and the market of your area.
Yeah, I think it's hard to talk about this generally because, you know, the audience of this podcast is all
international
across,
probably.
It is international, yeah. And all across the country. But I'll say, you know, where I am in the Bay Area of California, there's a huge market now for NPs.
Yes.
And you look at the growth rate of bedside nursing jobs compared to NPs. NPs is far and away like a much higher growth rate than clinical nurses. So it's worth looking into in your area. And one question I have for you is, what is the difference, like in practice, between a master's versus doctorate level NP?
I don't think there's any difference, honestly. And so it very much, I would definitely research if you have an organization you're thinking about, like, I want to work for them, what do they require? Because in a private entity like a hospital or a clinician group, like provider group, can have their own requirements that your state or, you know, area does not require. So if they're looking only to hire doctorate prepared nurse practitioners only with this kind of specialization, you definitely want to guide your applications to programs that would support that. But if you already have a master's and someone will take someone with a post-master certificate, that might be an economical choice because that's probably less tuition than a full master's or a DNP program. So there's a lot of variability in what organizations want. But I think it is always the best. It's always important to explore and research what the reality of the program is, time commitment-wise, success rates, and what works for you, and also how much support they give you, and the very real reality of like the hundreds of hours of clinical rotation, preceptor assignment. Because I think that's the biggest challenge for most NP students to complete their programs. And it's another endorsement for LinkedIn, because I see often LinkedIn or other social media groups, people will be posting all the time. And so that can also be a great way to find preceptors. You just have to get creative and know what you reasonably can do. Can you drive, commute an hour and a half each way? away 4 times a week during that semester, or do you need to be home because you have kids or loved ones or elder care or things like that? So just also knowing realistically what does your life allow for?
I imagine that a lot of, you know, NP students are working at the bedside. They are clinical nurses.
Does the program support you working? Some programs don't. Sometimes they want you to quit your job and just study the whole time. So is that realistic for you? So lots of considerations. And that applies to all school programs too.
Yeah. What is the pay looking like for NPs? And I think as a nurse in California, where we're generally well paid as clinical nurses, when I look at going into NP programs, I'm like, well, there's not much economic incentive.
In the Bay Area, I would say that's very true. And that's like a unique market space, but also there, but that also I have heard for example, we're in parts of the country where there might be a ton of NP programs and you have a ton of NP graduates every year, that means there's a surplus of applicants for these jobs. And so that drives down the market rate of salaries. And so even in places where, nurse practitioners may be compensated somewhat better than direct care nurses. Can you get that job? And how much more money are you making? And how does that compare to the cost of your nurse practitioner program? Because I think you also have to consider the debt or potential cost of that program.
And lost income if you need to stop working.
Yes. So if it's going to cost $100,000 in tuition, for example, and then you also can't work for 3 years, so that's a loss of what, X number of that. Yeah. Right. And then if you have life expenses, that's a challenge in itself. So I do encourage people to take a realistic cost-benefit approach to these programs too. And also know there's a lot of scholarships out there and a lot of programs that are more cost effective, have a lower price point tuition wise than others. And usually people don't care where you graduate from. They're more concerned about where you did your clinical rotations and the quality of those clinical rotations.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yes. So like it doesn't matter if you went to really fancy schmancy private Ivy League nurse practitioner program, you can go to a very generic online program, but what they want to see is like, where did you do clinical rotations and where are they familiar with them? How applicable are these with transferable skill sets to the job that you're looking for and things like that? Really important. So next I wanted to talk about the other NP, which is DNP, which is not in this case, the doctorate of nurse practitioner, but a doctorate of nursing practice. And this, depending on your DNP, so a DNP can be a DNP for a nurse practitioner. So that role is a doctoral level, 3-4 years of school, depending on the program, after your undergrad, and will also incorporate all the components of a nurse practitioner program and is an APRN. Okay, so that's the DNP of nurse practitioner, but that role is really no different, except you're going to a doctoral program and you'll have a little bit, you'll have extra academic requirements to get that doctoral degree. The other DNP, which is, I don't know which one's more common, but doctorate of nursing practice is not an APRN role. This is a doctoral level educational program, usually with a focus in nursing practice in leadership or education or something that is not a advanced practice area of focus. You always will have some sort of DNP project or thesis project, depending on your program, what they call it. And this is where you have to do a deep dive, doing some sort of research into a focused area that affects nursing practice. And this can have a very wide variety of topics. You have to then apply through your program after you submit like your big DNP thesis or project paper to defend that project to get that doctoral level degree. And when you go through a doctoral program, that's part of it, is you do a big project, you write a big paper, you submit it to a committee, and then usually you have to do what's called an oral defense, where you verbally discuss and defend your project. They always break it up over semesters, so you don't do it all at once. This is something that is like a 4-year or 3-year buildup usually. And so you take it in chunks and you get a ton of feedback and review, mentorship and advisor piece. But the level and quality of that review, mentorship and advisor may vary greatly depending on your DNP school program. So just know that there are online programs that are amazing quality There are also online programs that might have less support, so you may need to be more proactive and advocate for your needs more. This is not an advanced practice role like we were talking about. So this is not something where you can graduate with a doctor of nursing practice and then go practice as a nurse practitioner. That is separate, right? We were already talking about that. This doctoral degree track is often achieved by people, one, who just love school, two, who may be looking to be in a leadership position or an educator position. So DNP is going to help support you in that. This is called a terminal degree. There's nothing past the doctoral level. There are postdoctoral fellowships and things, which is like further study. Yeah, which is really cool. So you can go and study more, but you don't get more letters after your name. The D, when we talk about big D energy, this is big DNP energy. This is that as big as you get, the final degree that you get. Academic educators, they love having that. So this is like faculty at a nursing program will encourage you always to get a doctorate. If you're looking to achieve C-suite level at an organization, DNP will always help support you in that path, not required, but will always help support you. The other thing about terminal degree that I always like to mention is this is the degree that you finish and never do more, or it finishes you. So I know a lot of people who pursue the DNP thinking that this is for them and then realizing 2 years in, this is not for them. So this is something, and then you're in a similar position where you're like, I want to transfer into something else, but there's nothing to transfer into with the DNP. So you really need to evaluate if you like the degree program and have an idea of the project, because I think that's the biggest challenge for people is they don't realize they have to do this big DNP project or study or thesis kind of thing. And this is something you definitely develop over time, but I think it's really important to have an idea of what's your passion, what do you want to do the project in, and is it a realistic DNP project? Because there's a lot of limitations and guidelines of what qualifies as a DNP project. I'm not the person to tell you what those are. I just know from working with a lot of DNP students and also having colleagues that are DNP graduates, sometimes you're like, I want to do this big idea. And they're like, it needs to be very focused and very specific because basically it can't have been researched before. It has to be kind of a new research that you're doing, original work. So that also is important to know. Also knowing with DNPs, these programs are often very supportive of you working. They realize that most of their students are working professionals. There isn't a every semester clinical component, so clinical rotation component, but there is these, depending on the semester and what your curriculum is, you may have so many hours you have to do shadowing a leader or doing quality improvement work. That's kind of more the nature of your clinical quote-unquote rotations. And there are programs that are extra long where you can go part-time to help support you working. So I think that is a really good thing to know, that you don't have to be all in, kind of like with these APRN programs. Often you have to just go to school and barely work. These DNP programs often will support you in working.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like the few DNPs I know are, like you said, kind of C-suite. I know the head of case management at a hospital I was at had a DNP, kind of those who are overseeing things at a higher level in like the research, like you're saying, yes. Kind of looking at things system-wide, but researching that yes. system.
Yes. And to have those leadership positions, you don't necessarily have to have a doctorate, but there's definitely a trend of many C-suite people having the doctorate degree. So just know if that's your future goal, this might be something you want to consider. So in addition to the DNP doctorate of nursing practice, we also have the option, if you want to be a doctorate, you could also be a doctorate PhD RN. So a PhD with a nursing focus is, people might be very familiar or more familiar with the PhD idea. It's a very academic research focused doctorate program. It's often, I think, 4 years of school, 3 to 4 or more, depending on how fast you can complete it. It is a research focus with a research thesis. So this is like heavy data collection, heavy research focus, even more so, more rigorous standards than the DNP sort of research you would do. Usually this is being peer reviewed at a I don't want to say like a more thorough level, but the academic standards of research just are more intense, is my feeling and experience. Usually when you graduate from this, you work in academia or research. That's usually the track with PhD. And when I say academia, usually that means at a nursing university, some sort of university setting, or you can work for a research institute, or there is a lot of opportunity in the startup world. If you're like interested in biotech or any sort of healthcare startup, they love having a PhD nurse on staff, because not only do you have that clinician experience and perspective, but you also have that research expertise at the highest level. Again, a terminal degree, you finish it or it finishes you. You must really like school. If you want to go down this route, this is not something that you're like, school's okay, I'll get a PhD. No, you have to love school and you have to love research. These programs are all over the country, but they're usually associated with a research university. So just know that not all universities are research universities. The PhD track is less common online, because it's usually associated with a research organization. But it's a great track. And some of the most brilliant minds I know in healthcare are PhDs, including PhDs in nursing. So it's a beautiful thing if you want to do that. And you can really impact healthcare and patient care at a really high level. So I think that summarizes most of the advanced practice and graduate level nurse school. I didn't mention CRNA school. So certified nurse anesthetist. That is a graduate degree, master's or doctorate. They have both. You would work in the capacity of a nurse anesthetist. So think anesthesia, think the people who are doing OR, think people who are doing pain management, epidurals, all kinds of things like that. They work in a wide variety of acute care settings, some in the outpatient setting, but mostly acute care. It's a very competitive track to get into because the compensation and lifestyle, I think, is very attractive to many people. It's the highest compensated nursing role that I know of, and that's like across the board. Now, the salary does vary greatly depending on what state you're in and what the scope of practice is, depending on your state legislation requirements. You do have to have ICU experience of some kind to get into these programs, almost without fail. There are very few programs that will allow you in without ICU experience, but it can be NICU, PICU, or adult. And it's a great role. It's a very cool role, but you have to be ready for high risk, high stress environments, because often you're working at like very high acuity procedural areas just for that. So that now wraps up our graduate degree program.
Wow. There are so many options available to bedside nurses who would like to pursue a different role in nursing and also want to go back to school. That's incredible and wonderful for the nursing workforce. But what if you're looking for a change without having to go back to school for another degree? Don't worry, there are options for you too. Because next, Sarah will walk us through some other non-bedside nursing positions that typically do not require additional degrees.
So we're going to talk just kind of briefly about three other really awesome roles that are available to direct care nurses if they want to get away from the bedside. One is the nurse leader. So you can go the nurse manager or director route in organizations. And this is a great role if you're really looking to look at systems improvement again. If you love working with staffing, if you like working with budgets, those are really important, I think, personality characteristics to want to have to pursue these roles. You don't have to have a certain degree for these roles. So I've known nurse managers and directors with an ADN, depending on the organization. More commonly, it's a bachelor's or master's degree requirement. And I'm seeing a trend to at least require a master's degree. But again, there is a nurse staffing crisis in all levels of roles, including leadership. So sometimes there's a lot more flexibility in those degree requirements. The degree you get doesn't really matter. If you want to get a master's in health administration, leadership, nursing, whatever it is that you want to get that degree in, that's usually, it's just a master's degree requirement if they do have that. But you can just have a BSN or associate's degree in some cases. you optimally will have some leadership experience or at least interest in leadership. I would not recommend this as an out just to get away from bedside. Know that you will be working with people and you'll be working with your coworkers. So there's that to consider often. Like if you're advancing to the manager director of your own unit, know that you'll now be responsible for staffing schedules and pay of the people that you've worked with. So that has its pros and cons depending on your situation. It is a great role where you can impact the vibe or the morale of your department. You can definitely help foster healthy work environments in that role. You can innovate and make meaningful change. Your boss usually then is a CNO, CNE, or another director, depending on what the level of, if you're a nurse manager, it's usually a director, assistant director is your boss. If you're a director, another director or a VP or a C-suite is usually your boss. So everyone still has a boss in those roles. They are usually salaried. So you may work 9 to 5. Monday through Friday, you may work 4/10s. I think the more commonly the unit or department you're in charge of is often like your baby, and you're kind of responsible for it all the time. So what I see a lot of is the leader is often on call. Anytime there's a disaster, unexpected downtime, earthquake, tornado, some sort of patient care crisis, you might be coming in at 2 a.m. And when it's salaried, there's no extra overtime pay. So just know that when you're going into these roles, you always want to negotiate good compensation because it looks really good for 40 hours a week. But just know often these positions are 50 hours plus a week. But they're really beautiful positions and a great option for people who have that interest in wanting to make department level changes. And you can definitely continue up the ladder, so to speak, in organizations. You can go nurse manager, assistant director, director, VP, CNE, CNO, whatever you want to do. And usually you start somewhere with kind of a what we call middle management or a manager level position. Another great role is the unit-based nurse educator. If you have a passion for teaching others of your colleagues, this is a great role that usually is in the acute care or clinical environment, outpatient environment. You will have a nurse educator. So this is someone with a nursing background who helps educate staff. That is their job. Usually you have at least a bachelor's degree. Sometimes they have a master's degree requirement, but not always. Again, depends on your organization and what they require. There isn't a specific degree you have to get like an APRN to have this role. This is just someone who has a passion for education and hopefully some skill sets and able to translate things to make sense to other people to educate your staff. When you're improving staff education and knowledge and skill sets, you're impacting all the patients they touch. And I think that's a wonderful way to look at that position. You're working in direct care, but you're working with the caregivers who deliver the direct care is how I like to look at it. And this kind of role exists in hospitals, clinics, and I think it's really important that you like working with people, sharing and educating and helping others when you're looking at this kind of position. So in an ideal world, the nurse educator is educating the staff. In a realistic world, often I think of the nurse educator role can be in situations more of a compliance role, like you're the compliance officer. So what I mean by that is that, especially in the acute care setting, if you're the nurse educator for a pediatric unit, you're going to be in charge often of making sure everybody's competencies are up to date. You're making sure the checklists are done for onboarding new hires and new grads. You might be in charge of orientation programs. And so you do a lot of that. Depending on the organization, there may be more of that of a focus and maybe less of that as a focus. Also, you want to find out when you're looking at these jobs, what is the staffing for the education department, right? So if you're a nurse educator for a department of 20 staff, that ratio is not so bad. More realistically, you might be in charge of 5 departments with 300, 400, 1,000 people. And if there's only you, then there's no coverage, right? So if you want to take a week off, but joint commission's coming in that week, are you able to take that week off or are you obligated to commit? So these are really important considerations, but there's wide variability in that title, nurse educator. So it very much depends on the organization you're working for. The outpatient lower acuity clinic might be less stressful or rigorous than the requirements of an inpatient unit at a large teaching facility. So also looking at those factors, I think, are important when looking at that role. And last but not least, I want to talk a little bit about nurse professors and instructors, because I think this is one of the most important roles that exists in nursing right now. To become a nurse of any level, you have to go to nursing school. And to have a nursing school, you have to have nurse professors and instructors. So these are very special people in my heart, because without them, we have no nursing profession. So if you are a person who's loved precepting on your unit, a clinical instructor position might be something you might be interested in, because basically when you're a clinical instructor, you work for a nursing school and you're responsible for a small team of students to help as their clinical experiences. And so you don't usually do a lot of lecture and maybe no lecture at all, but you might just kind of mother, father, parent, hen these students through their clinical experiences. This job does not require you to have a certain level of degree all the time for a clinical instructor. So this is very specific experience. A lot of people and a lot of our nursing schools may say they require a master's degree or higher, but I recently had a colleague and client who got a clinical instructor position in the Bay Area with an associate's degree because they were so short of clinical instructors that they changed the requirements to you could have an associate's degree, but I think you had to have at least 10 years of experience. So they were like, we will take you. I just want to encourage people, opportunities are out there and you should explore them. And the best way to find out if you want to be a clinical instructor is to just reach out to all the local nursing schools and find out what are the requirements, and know that one school's requirements can differ widely from another one. And then the other role that's really important is the nursing professor or nursing instructor who's in charge of like lecture. So that is very different from just the clinical instructor. Sometimes a nursing professor or lecture instructor will do both and do clinical and lecture, but sometimes they are just more in the lecture setting. And for that role, usually you have to have at least a master's degree, but again, not always. And they do optimally, you know, ideally want a doctorate prepared nurse. But again, we don't have enough of those. And so schools are having to make it work. So if you have like a master's degree and a passion for lecturing, reach out to your local nursing schools and find out if you can maybe be a good fit for them. This is also positions if you're adjunct faculty or not full-time staff with a nursing school, you can do it part-time. You can do it on a semester-based schedule or quarter schedule, depending on what their schedules are. So this can be a great part-time gig if you're feeling burnt out, maybe you want to stay direct care, but have some spare time and want to reach out and try something new. This can be a great way to kind of dip your toes in the water of something different in nursing and also give back to the nursing profession.
It can have a big impact on these nursing students as they jump into their new careers.
100%. And I think they value so much anyone who's currently working at the bedside or in a direct care capacity, because so often nurse educators are historically were more academic focused and hadn't worked direct care in a long time. So they were getting taught by professors and instructors who didn't have a recent direct care experience. And so I think it's invaluable for these nursing students to have instructors that have current practice experience. So you are giving them the gift of so many things. It could be so wonderful. What I will say, the drawback of nurse professor instructors is often the compensation is not very competitive with direct care. That can be different depending on where you are and what the market is, and also the resources financially for the nursing school that you're working for. There are some nursing schools that pay very well. There are some that pay okay, and then there's some that pay very little. So also when you're looking at these opportunities in your area, don't be afraid or timid about reaching out to multiple nursing universities if you have them in your area, or online universities to see what kind of work this can look like. And with the online universities, you can often work from home if you're doing lecture stuff, but you have to have some passion for online tech platforms.
Totally. Even though the compensation might not be as good as direct patient care, I think it's worth looking at this at like a holistic point of view, because as a clinical nurse, like I'm having to work weekends. I'm having to work holidays.
Yes.
I don't have that much flexibility in my schedule. So you have to think about all of this when you're looking at the dollar amount that you would be making, because you could think about like the better work-life balance that you would potentially have in a clinical instructor role.
Absolutely. And just like any job, one organization may have a very healthy work environment for a clinical instructor or professor, and another one may be a very toxic work environment. So also, if you wade into these waters and try university and are like, this department's awful and I'm quitting, know that another university might be very different. Just like in a hospital direct care, I can work in one ER at one facility and it's terrible work environment, and then I can work at another and it's a great work environment. So just know that that variability exists too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. This has been a great discussion. What would you like to make sure like all listeners take home with them?
Sure. So just know that what we talked about today are not all of the opportunities of working away from the bedside, but these are just some, and especially the ones that focused on possible graduate degree requirements. So know that there's so much diversity in nursing, and there's so much else out there that you may know about or may not even know about, and I don't know about. So super excited if you could share that with us in the comments or anything like that. That would be amazing. I want everyone to know that what you should decide to do ultimately in your career needs to align with your personal and professional goals, and make sure that it works with your work-life balance. Also, when you're looking at roles, make sure you understand if it needs an advanced degree or not. And if you need an advanced degree, make sure you do your research on the school. We talked a lot about there's multiple program tracks for different roles. There's lots of different cost of schools. There's schools that may offer more support or less support to their students, depending on what their clinical rotation needs. So make sure you're doing your research for all these academic programs. Make sure that when you're doing that research, the academic programs you're looking to apply to support your goals. Also know that rules change. So a great example in the last like 10, 15 years is that in the emergency department, it used to be that for a nurse practitioner role, they only really hired FMPs because that was the common role and that was a great fit for the patient population that comes in through the ER. But now there's more and more specialization in nurse practitioner programs. And now there's discussion if an FMP can see all patients in an ER, or can they only see up to a certain acuity level? And then do you need an acute care or emergency nurse practitioner graduate MP? So know that even though you may understand the rules and regulations in your state or area or your organization, when you start your program, sometimes those things change before you finish it. And so just always be assessing what's going on in your organization and state to make sure that your program of study will support you in getting the job you want at the end. And if you want to make it happen, you often can. Networking is key in doing your research on the job market. So even if it's a challenging job market in your area, if you start early and be proactive, if there's limited clinical rotation opportunities, if you aren't sure if you can get a job because it's a very competitive market, just be aggressive and proactive in your networking. You can do a lot of that online, like networking on LinkedIn. It's a great place. Use your personal network, your social media networks. Be professional about it, because people, if you're putting posts out there that are not of a professional tone, they may not be really willing to support and help you and extend a hand. But know that you can do a lot on your end to help support your career path and educational path. And just know that also what's true in one state may be very different in another state. So depending on where you live, what you can do with a certain degree might be very different than what you can do in another state. So just also being very aware of your state regulations and legislation is really important.
Awesome. What take-home message do you have for nurses related to nursing roles after the bedside?
So I always like to tell people, even though we've talked a lot about roles that need advanced degree or graduate degree programs of study, I really encourage people, don't feel pressure to go back to school in your nursing career. So I think people who love school, want to do roles that require more schooling, that's amazing. And that's really important to consider. But you can also do a huge amount in the field of nursing without going back to school. There is so much out there that we didn't even cover, but there's so many roles and opportunities for the associate's degree nurse, the bachelor's prepared nurse. And don't think that you have to go back and get a graduate degree if you didn't really want to. I've done so much in my nursing career with the degree I have. It's all up to you. It's always what fits for you, what aligns with your goals and aligns with your passions and the balance and wellness of your life. So I think don't try to fit yourself in a box just because you feel outside pressure. Always listen to your intuition and your heart, and know that if you don't want to go back to school but really want to make an impact in a certain patient population, there may be a way to do that without having to go back and get a master's or doctorate degree.
Yeah. And it sounds especially like a great time for those who want to progress in their career but not go back to school. Yeah. I think you're making a good point that now is a good time to kind of test the waters and reach out and see, like, do I really need to have that master's degree to do, you know, X, Y, and Z?
Oh, yes. The staffing shortage, as challenging as it has also opened up almost endless opportunities for nurses.
Yeah, I like it. Like the cup is half full.
Yeah, 100%. Like staffing, terrible. But opportunities, immense. And also know there's so many ways to professionally develop and educate yourself without going to school. There's certifications, like the traditional kind of certify in your specialty areas. If you want to get away from direct care but want to teach, there's opportunities to teach review courses for those exams once you take them kind of thing. Or if you have something you want to focus on in education, there's nothing stopping anyone anymore from creating an online module or class. Like there's so much nurse entrepreneurship out there. It's kind of incredible scene right now, I think. And also if you wanted, there's a lot of certificate programs within nursing, but also kind of nurse adjacent, like you can get a nursing informatics certificate from different organizations.
Yeah.
So that's the science of working with like tech to applying it to nursing. If you love diversity, equity, and inclusivity work, you can get a DEI certificate, which has nothing to do directly with nursing, but something that can definitely enhance healthcare, right? There's so many things you can get certified in. And these are almost like micro learning opportunities where it's like maybe a 6-week, 12-week, 6-month program. It does cost tuition. Sometimes they are thousands of dollars, but it's something that can help give you a new focus, a lot of marketability in your job applications, open up new doors in your career path, and never deviate from nursing. So you don't have to go back to school for an advanced degree. So just know lots of opportunities out there.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for being on the
podcast. Oh, it's a pleasure. Today. Thank you. Anytime. I'm excited to connect and I hope to come back someday soon.
If you are at a crossroads in your nursing career or just interested in a new thing, Sarah can help you. She has resume and cover letter templates for both new grad and experienced nurses that help you take the guesswork out of the whole process. I personally have used Sarah's nurse resume template, and I really wish I'd used it earlier because it was super fast for me to fill in the blanks and use her suggested wording. Plus, it helps you get picked up by the computer software every time. Use the promo code UPMYGAME to get 15% off all of her resume and cover letter templates. In addition, Sarah provides one-on-one services like interview coaching and academic advisement for those looking to apply to graduate programs. As we talked about in this episode, being a good nurse doesn't necessarily translate into you interviewing well. So Sarah can help you present your best self in the high-stakes interview setting. If you mention this podcast when you contact Sarah, she will give you 10% off her one-on-one services. Get in touch with her at newthingnurse.com. The link is in the show notes. All right, that's all for today. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and find that it adds value to you and your career, please share it with your nursing friends and colleagues and rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. It helps me to grow the show so that I can keep delivering you high-value content. Until next time, I hope that you have upped your nursing game.